Your party animal, Cam, and here I am, night with Oreo. It's always a treat having him on because it's just a nonstop party.
Oh yes,
if not a battle of words. And since we love all these various movies and shows and even books and comics, and we just figured, hey, you know, yeah, let's get all to start off. I mean, we've described best moments before, but like, I just figured we got to get back on track with doing more of these because almost everyone wanted to do a chat of whatever topic we picked, but it was not easy to always get on the same chat. So I figured, hey, we can just resample it. We could make it be just kind of a themed week. Here are the best moments of X, Y, Z. And we're entering the J.R.R. Tolkien fantasy world of Middle Earth. And, you know, with Lord of the Rings, the Hobbit prequels, as well as the Rings of Power.
I haven't watched that yet.
I'd love to hear your take, but I just loved how just about every fan. So after this year, I now know that every fan base has its fucking issues. I thought it was just Star Wars and Halloween. And
are you that slow?
He's that slow. And so next thing I know, oh well, guess what? Mystery Science Theater, Star Trek, even Twilight Zone, Lord of the Rings, and even freaking Willow all got some serious toxic fandom. I'm like, Jesus.
I saw some of that on Facebook and a little bit on Twitter. What
ever happened to just, I like it, I don't like it, instead of, I will attack all you fans.
I don't like it. He's not short enough for me. How short do you want? I want Smurf short. Well, then
I can't have a powerful woman. She's unlikable if she's powerful. I'm like, what? Oh
god, that's so pathetic. That's like the worst.
Black Hobbit. Can't have it. No. Not gonna.
I think it's funny if they turn racist. I'm like, they can't be black. What the fuck's wrong with being black?
I mean, there's freaking humans in the very first Lord of the Rings movie, and they describe it and. The book was left to everyone's imagination. You can't tell me that an author who wrote, you know, post-World War I is restricted to that outdated, less progressive perception of what the world should or shouldn't be like. It's just like, it's a fantasy book. It is to your imagination. Mm-hmm. And they went there without trying to rub any social commentary in your face. And
I had that argument the other day about a fucking ship. Oh god, it was so dumb. Somebody made
an actual ship.
Yeah, it was funny. Somebody did an artwork of Cara Dune and Mando together, and the one I was like, "That's so cool!" And the lighting on it was really good. And the one guy comments and he's like, it doesn't make any sense. I'm like, it's a fucking ship. It doesn't have to make sense. And he's like, there's no chemistry. There's no chemistry between them. Who fucking cares?
That's the problem with the internet. It's like we attracted all these 10-year-olds who like to shit talk. And it's just like, would you be doing this in an actual museum? No, because a museum is the kind of thing that would bore you. So you wouldn't be here anyway. But there's nothing better than going to an actual live like art studio or museum and then seeing how it just varies by person to person. Like,
that's right.
You'll recircle around and then you'll be like, oh my god, now this painting means so much different to me. And that's the beauty of it. That's artwork in a nutshell. And with Lord of the Rings, so what was your intro to it? I had read The Hobbit. It's one of my favorite books that I, on the record, have read 3 different times. And then I saw the movies as they were coming out. Like, in 2002, I think my uncle had brought the DVD of the first movie over, and I watched it with my dad. And then when Two Towers was rentable, I asked
my mother. That movie.
Yeah, it was. I was so happy as a 12-year-old at that time because I was like, I get to go to bed having seen an epic, you know, spectacle movie. And then I saw Return of the King in the theaters, and I think opening weekend, and that was dynamite. That was like the revolutionary like movie epic scale experience,
and
like,
all that that whole trilogy under $300 million together. That's amazing.
Under the regular amount that you would think it would be like 50 million or some more, but it does make sense by even late 90s money why they adjusted it to that scale. And can you imagine had that first movie come out and we would have been left on a cliffhanger just like with the Ralph Bakshi movie? We would have been like, what the fuck? Daniel died. This movie's journey was for nothing.
I remember I watched the first one on VHS and I was like, I sat through 3 hours to find out I gotta watch the fucking sequel.
So you were like, what the hell's going on here? Yeah. It helped that there wasn't any 3 year delay between them. It would have really gone off the rails, probably like every other saga that was doing that. Like,
mm-hmm.
It was just so wild how it was coming out, and just about everything at that point had to be epic.
Yeah, and how isolated that whole trilogy was, because were all stuck in New Zealand for a whole 18 months filming. Outside world contact, just all them together. And that's beautiful because you have that camaraderie and the bonding, and there was nothing that got in the way aside from Viggo's toe getting busted by the helmet.
Yeah, and
best fight ever.
They've learned so quickly like what they wanted to do. They were just like, okay, this Stuart Townsend guy, he's a piece of shit, so let's go ahead and fire him and get this Viggo guy.
I still wish that, and it's amazing, he actually trained for the role completely. Like, he did horseback riding and combat on horse.
He apparently can do some stunts, and I like the 13 TV show that's based on that manga that also was a video game, that spy show that wasn't Bourne Identity. But yeah, he apparently, even when he was very committed, he apparently just was mouthing off all the time to where they were like, you know what, get the fuck out of here. We're done, dude. And I mean, I can't blame anyone for how they went about it, how they slowly opened up to each other, became friends.
Yeah.
And just how at that time, like, every movie had to look epic at that point. You know, Matrix sequels were coming out, Pirates of the Caribbean was huge. Yeah.
And that was 2000s. That was early before this whole CGI cum fest hit in 2010.
Oh, yeah. So, 2002 and 2003, they both had their fair share, just spectacular years with occasional flops and infamously hysterical movies, but all together just very both solid years. And coming off the heels of other Ridley Scott type epics and Star Wars prequels coming out, and it's just so hysterical how there's something for everybody while also very incredible that you have that capacity. People are embracing some of these manga and foreign films overseas. Years before
Old Boy came out during that time too.
And it's just so hysterical how the guys who did Star Trek Nemesis were so dismayed. They're like, oh, why didn't it not do good? I'm like, you opened at the same time as Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's true, because like, I love Nemesis. That's one of my top favorites. All the other ones are amazing, but I love Nemesis. It's so fun. Underrated.
It's just one of those, you have to get past the crappy editing and overacting by Tom Hardy, but you can find a fun movie in there.
Yeah.
That was actually a fun rental, because I actually we were growing up around that same time that my first intro to Star Trek, I would see parts of like the original and it didn't really catch on to me, but then I saw Next Gen in the Q-Who episode, which introduced us to the Borg, and I was a fanboy for life. Even when people were doing the whole, oh, it's no longer cool to be a Trekkie, I'm like, yes, it is. But just like it's cool to be a horror fan and you're into X-Files and all that. But it was interesting to me because I saw how like family started learning from each other. Like, they don't remember this, but like my folks were introducing me to like the earlier movies, and we almost didn't give a go because we just, the first one, the motion picture is just so slow. But I think it just helped that I was into all like the big major sci-fi, fantasy, mildly horror kind of stuff. So I already had a respect for again, all the spectacle. I loved music and sound and film editing just from Star Wars, while Track, you know, opened up how you could do sci-fi, have excellent acting, and take kind of a B-movie formula and then actually make it better, you know, in a Twilight mm-hmm. Zone way. And it's very twisted. So I was, that's why I was already open to the newer Batman movies, as well as 80s, you know, cult classics like Die Hard, Terminator, and Rambo. And so I just all, that all intersected well. And Lord of the Rings was kind of just second nature to me, because I was just like, okay, so these elves are basically like freaking Vulcans. they're just, true. It's not just the years. It's also just the whole unemotional wise man. And, you know, the influence is even more apparent, you know, even before you realize Tolkien is a Beowulf fanatic. I mean, just even when you were reading Greek mythology in high school, it was like, yeah, this is what every epic filmmaker is inspired by. Ultimately, this is the whole forbidden, what you can or cannot have, is like the ring is basically the equivalent of the sirens in the Iliad.
Yeah.
Tonight, all, I'm sorry if I've been lecturing y'all a little too much, but it's all interesting here.
Connecting the dots. That's what's so much
connecting fun. It a bit. And what's funny is by that time, you know, I was already, my uncle was kind of getting us to sit down and watch other epic sci-fi shows like Stargate SG-1 and Battlestar Galactica. And it was interesting how those music tones and battles kind of became almost Lord of the Rings-ish in later years. And, I have to applaud, though, Battlestar and Terminator show composer Bear McQuarrie has also scored Outlander. His entire soundtrack for Rings of Power, dynamite. Like, they even use the Howard Shore main theme, and then he goes his own way with it. But you can listen to it on Spotify, and it is really just dynamite. And all I can say is, what a good pick. You know, the dude had done all kinds of depressing, you know, epic stuff like Walking Dead and what have you. And I was like, yeah, of course he's the right pick. He knows how to jettison all this emotion, all this epic skill material. And Rings of Power, I do have to say, without spoiling anything, if we have to grade any of the battles, I gotta say Galadriel's initial fight is really awesome, because the way, you know, you instant, for me, not everyone, but for me personally, I accepted this new gal who's done a bunch of different independent stuff for like A24 and UK programming, and I just instantly bought her as this is the younger Galadriel. And those first two episodes where she's having to find out the traitors in her midst, the other people who wronged her, and avenging her brother's death, and the way it's kinetically edited, I instantly got into it. And I know some people found it too slow. I personally, I was ready for life. I'm like, okay, this tells me, this is storytelling 101. Like, what does the character want? They want to avenge, you know, the wrongdoing. I'm like, perfect. Take me on the journey.
And I know, it's like people expect flashy shit and glitz, and it's like, no, we need organic storytelling.
Right. It's not my horse by horse, my kingdom for a horse. It's more, you know, along we go into the mountains. Yeah. And there's some total mind fucking, if that makes sense, like just total just psychological warfare near the end, which is also like very surreal. Like, I did not expect them to go there, but I have to applaud them, especially for taking some of these people who worked on other shows, like much like Outlander, the Dick Wolf shows, and even part of the Breaking Bad X-Files family, some of these writers. And I'm curious to see where it will go. Overall, it's just interesting how Isildur is very much the Anakin Skywalker, the Darth Vader of the saga. He lets everyone down, but you forget about it because it's downplayed in the movies and in the book, you know, after the Second Age. But I applaud him for saying, hey, this show will end once, you know, Middle Earth is in ruin in the Third Age. Like, you already have seen the movies. We want to respect
the
movies.
You know it's going to happen.
Exactly. It's just like these new Star Trek shows. Hey, we'll use the visual style of the new material, but we're going to go our own way with it, especially because we can't use the Silmarillion, but we can still reference some events. And the Balrog design looked the same, but that ultimately, if we were to describe any of the great battles from the games, books themselves, or even the movies, what are some ones that really you think are just so well staged, outlined, and move the plot along, much like the Terminator movies, instead of feeling like excess?
Oh my,
it's so rare.
I know, it's hard because that whole saga is just so, it's so interconnected, and there's like, it's got the right layout. And when you look at stuff today, it's just focused on action, humor, action, and some story. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Lotter, like, you had like the Two Towers has the best build up to the fight at I forget what the fuck it was. Helm's Deep. Yeah, that, just the build up to Helm's Deep and defending that shit. That was amazing. Like, fuck. And I think what makes it so special is that, you know, one, it's organic as hell. Like, you can't top that. And it's practical. Like, it's not a heavy reliance on CGI. It was all mostly built. And I love that.
Yeah, and it's just so unreal. You get
sucked into it so quickly.
Nowadays, that would be all green screened or...
Oh, yeah.
Very blue much screen. Like a Call of Duty type game, or even Mandalorian, where there's interactive screens playing, but
yeah.
But yes, the Helm's Deep battle is just neat because, you know, I've seen some nitpicking Lord of the Rings fans on rare occasions who like were never fond of any adaptation, even the cartoon movies.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But yeah, there were some who that tripped up on, oh, they switched around the wood elves who are here to help out. You know, they're supposed to be at Minas Tirith versus here, but it actually does work better for the movie because it just shows you how they could have all the support in the world, but they're outnumbered. And
yeah, that's what I like. It's like that last man standing. It's a final fight. And then there's even more buildup. And then that's
Arwen helps out with the other elves with the ghost army in the third book, but I liked how they just had her just mainly just save the hobbits and be more intriguing in the first movie, because that was just a cool, you know, tidal wave. And just all those guys, they just, I think because we didn't have time to prejudge them, you know, like they just did so well in the roles. Like, you look at the original casting that they were considering, and it's just like, yeah, that makes sense, but you would have probably had some problems, especially if you're trying to get Russell Crowe in there. People like to misbehave on the set, and they couldn't afford that.
Threw in scheduling conflicts too. That was a big thing.
Scheduling conflicts, driving in all these Americans from overseas,
And then find the commitment for it too, because they're like, we're doing three films and you got to stay here until they're all done. And people are like, I don't know if I can do that.
It's been really just neat how they picked all these. I mean, you got to go with these character actors before their ego goes out of check, or who are used to all kinds of productions and giving 100% each time. And so to get all these semi-knowns, you know, like Sean Astin, and then, you know, kid actors like Elijah Wood, and then people who've been working since late 70s, early 80s, like Ian McKellen and Viggo Mortensen, and just keep launching it from there. It's just like, they, kudos to everybody, you know, all the screenwriters, the editors, cinematographers. And
costume department, especially
and like you said, the production design, just on spot. You got to build a world, literally. I see. And before we go on, like, why do you think so many, whenever you see the inevitable, it's overrated, you know, why do people have a problem with free endings in the third movie? Like, it to me is just a breathing point. I don't see it as, oh, it's over long, and I don't see how anyone could fall asleep during these. It's too loud.
If it's your first time through, I can understand that. That's understandable. But if you've seen it like numerous times, it's like, oh yeah, it's gonna be fine. You back and can enjoy this all the time.
If it's at 4 a.m, I can understand. But like, it's so loud and nonstop. Like, I just can't.
I don't know. Some people have short attention spans.
Apparently, because on occasion, like, I will just wait for it, and without fail, there will be some people saying, "Oh, Lord of the Rings, not my thing." Now, don't get me wrong. I wasn't crazy about how every movie or show felt like they had to be styled after that. It was annoying in Chronicles of Riddick and even some of the new Narnia movies, how they just felt, oh, it must be shot or look just like Lord of the Rings. It's like, no, just use its invite to make you understand that fantasy still sells, and it doesn't. And again, its name doesn't have to be Star Wars.
Word. But I think the biggest thing that was the real issue was when the young adult films, all of them.
Oh, wait, different kind of discussion. Just kidding, guys.
Yeah, Anna. No, it's like when all of them came out and everything was trying to live up. Because you guys think this is 2000s and already Lotter and Star Wars have set a precedent for that decade. And everything is trying to follow up to that precedent, and it doesn't always work out. Sometimes it does, but not always. I mean, shit. Ugh. It's just so strange. And the young adult books, all them films burned out too, because it was trying to be something new and something different. Always found the same setup, and it was like sad.
It seems like every other record producer, like, their notes that they were given by their studio and to everyone else was everything must look and sound the same. And that they caused an unintended, unneeded
vanilla saturation.
Oh, totally. Aside from all the ripoffs, like, that's how it was. Everything's got to be new metal or, you know, auto-tune pop music. And
yeah, I had that issue. Mm-hmm. A few years back, listening to different R&B artists, I'm like, why does everybody sound like fucking Rihanna? I'm like, what the fuck? Why do you all sound like Monica or Rihanna?
Can, like, you, you know, like, be original, please?
Oh, no, it's like, fuck. Please. And all that breathy shit, like,
yeah, that's who I am. Yeah.
Well,
oh, boy. And, you know, like you said, Helm's Deep was a cool, it's often been noted as a cool homage to what's it called,
high school?
No, high school wrestling. Akira Kurosawa's you know, Hidden Fortress, Seven Samurai, which is great because, you know, it's totally it, like, but it's its own special battle in its own way as well. So, I mean, I gotta applaud him because that wasn't easy.
Word, because that's a lot of training and shit.
Mm-hmm.
But the coolest fact I found out about Return of the King, the final fight, was that most of the horse riders were all women. That was so fucking cool.
Right?
I was like, damn, really? I was like, oh yeah, they were pretty cool.
And I love how they saved the horses for the very end. Like, no.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have made sense to spend all that time, all that money, having horses and everyone falls to their death. It's like it's very meticulous, and it's honestly, this is the why I like doing these battles in moments, because it's really neat to see how everything just soars. It skyrockets onto the screen. And if you were to believe that maybe they were trying to outdo each other, I couldn't blame you. But at the same time, I don't think they are. But,
well, I mean, if you compare Two Towers to Return of the King in terms of scale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And then you throw in the extended cuts and compare that, like, well, yeah, they were trying to outdo
this. No, this is a good chat. I see some who you know, all those versions are on both Prime and HBO Max. Do you, which versions do you do? I can only do the extended nowadays.
Same. I can't do theatrical after that shit. I'm like, nah, I need
just
the
all the stuff
sword.
You're missing is just good, yes. Good stuff. And
you get that disc and it's like two, four, there's another hour of deleted scenes that were cut. Mm-hmm. What? Like, I need all of
to have those back in is just great. Like, you feel so much more closure when you even incorporate the final battle between Gandalf and Saruman. Like, I've seen some people note how they didn't care for their first fight. I like that first fight because you can't tell. I mean, you're just not because of how it's, again, meticulously edited. You aren't thinking of, oh, okay, this is the stunt double getting thrown over hills, because you're just so drawn into the moment and the natural lighting and just the intensity of the whole scenario. And it, the third movie, you did kind of forget in the theatrical. It's like, yeah, where the fuck did Saruman and, you know, Grima go? And you see them briefly, but you don't see how it ends, you know, in the extended, where it's like, no, Grima, you know, betrays Saruman, stabs him, and he falls down, you know, impaling himself.
Yep, eats that water wheel good.
And I get it. You know, it would have been too much to take in for theatrical, but, you know, now that along with Aragorn saying essentially screw you to the, you know, mouth of Sauron, you know, at the gates, you know, like that makes for a way more epic, like, intro to the final battle. And you know
Return of the King is 20 years old this year. Fuck,
wow,
20 fucking years
old. I remember it just like it was yesterday. I really do. Like, it just was. I can understand not everyone caring for that, but like, when Marvel, like, that's kind of why I liked parts 3 and 4 of Avengers the most, because they're trying to be like Lord of the Rings. It wasn't for everybody, but I like, this brought me back to when I actually like going to the movies for the cinema experience, you know, like, and it's kind of still missing to me. Like, I get that on occasion from when I was going to something like an Olympus Has Fallen or John Wick type movie or Equalizer. Oh. But when I see the actual thing, I really want to actually just like take it in and actually.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Because
top row, middle seat, snacks,
and
suicide,
I can't blame them.
Chill.
Totally. Just sit back in that seat. And I can't blame them for taking out the Tom Bombadil chapter, because as awesome a moment as it is in the book, it would have just rung totally false in the movie. Because he would have been like, well, so that was all for nothing. I learned something you could have told me in, you know, 5 minutes. And I know some hardcore fans would have liked to see it betrayed, but I'm just saying, like, just some stuff, it has to go, unfortunately. It's just, we don't have our loose attention span that we had in the 70s where, you know, I'm here all day. Hit me. I'm like, we don't have time.
And now when I watch movies, I'm like, I need to see everything. And then I see deleted scenes for different movies. And I'm like, man, why don't we add this shit the fuck in? And then you rewatch it and it's like, oh, this got repurposed for another film. And I'm like, that's fucking smart.
Yeah, they pulled a Roger Corman, Wizards of the Lost Kingdom. Where they're just taking leftover Beastalker footage, Death Stalker footage.
Oh, now I remember. Coco had that, actually. In the original cut for Coco, the family was singing.
She was an awesome gorilla, I'm told.
Yeah, I love that fucking movie.
Just sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the original premise was Coco's family sang when they were chasing him. And it wasn't working out, and it clashed with the other idea, so they took it out. And then that got repurposed for Encanto a few years later. Yeah. I was like, I recognize this shit.
Yeah, Graham Revell and James Horner and many of those other guys were like the kings of repurposing their various music, so I'm not surprised that they would do that for some of these Pixar and Disney movies. You know, just you got to. You don't want to go to waste, so
you don't want it to be same shit. You want to reinvent yourself.
Mm-hmm. I actually also applied just even Mike Post and some of these other TV composers just taking on these themes and using it in their material.
That's always smart. It's always good to repurpose whatever you didn't use before, because it'll unlock something better down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember what the fuck. Something didn't get used and it was repurposed as a show down the road, and I can't remember what the fuck it was.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry, dude.
I know.
But altogether, I mean, just even the opening battle, like, that sets the grim atmosphere. Yes. And the voice, just to reanalyze the scene, like, if you analyze any scene in this, you're gonna feel how it was storyboarded, how it was edited, and for anyone to just downplay, oh, that was easy. No, that was not. That was shot on film. That had a soundstage. Someone had to figure this out and figure out where is the scene where Isildur gets killed by men trying to seek the ring. Where is the scene where Elrond first enters the battle and realizes?
Where's the scene where Sauron gets his nails clipped?
Right, and Sauron goes down for the count, and to downplay this, like, oh, it was nothing. I'm like, no, it was something, guys. That's
word.
Did not happen overnight.
Yeah.
But it's just such a good intro without overwhelming anybody or making you feel like, hey, I don't really follow what's going on here.
Man, I remember seeing that and I was like, man, I hope they show that shit again.
Mm-hmm.
Never got to see it again. God damn it.
I wish I could have seen the first one in the theater. I might have been bummed out, I guess, but I don't know. I wouldn't have been in the right time slot, like a year earlier, unless I had been like my. What's funny is I always was just, again, kind of getting up to date on all the giant blockbuster movies, but I did my best to always just like be caught up with some of today's blockbusters. I didn't really bother for a while with trashy comedies or horror until much later. It was just so funny how with these, like, I could always talk about them because every summer my cousins, who were raised by my aunt, who's been a Lord of the Rings fan since 70s, like, they would always come over and I was instantly on their mind. And my brother had only seen parts of it, when we would do watch parties with guests on Fridays, like, my uncle and father even knew I loved it so much, they went ahead and bought the extended DVD when it got discounted. And so I was for years just watching that. And sometimes my sister would ask, hey, she got into it much later, she's like, can you take it out? I'm like, sure. But if I had to pick just an iconic scene, I gotta go with the Return of the King final speech between Merry and Gandalf, where they're talking about hope. And sure, there's nothing amazing really about the dialogue, but it's just so straightforward and well interjected that it's the perfect compliment. And that, along with showing, hey, we've really learned, we've had, cave trolls and goblins, now we got Uruk-hai, which you forget, are mutant elves, and as well as orcs and other armored armies. Now we got those guys in addition to all these other orcs and trolls, and now we got these armored trolls. And it doesn't help that your damn King Denethor is a total piece of shit and
total cunt,
losing his mind, total C word, and he is about to fall off to his death, thankfully. And
because he got too hot of a tan in that tanning bed.
And it's just so unique to just show how, again, Gandalf is leading this whole deal.
Yeah, My top favorite scene always makes me cry, and that is Theoden's speech to the Rohirrim Riders.
Yes.
That speech. Nothing tops that speech. Nothing.
Yeah, it's a very well done scene, especially when you're not crazy about Theoden, how he's just sloppy with his leadership at first, and then he kind of makes up for it in that final movie.
Mm-hmm.
When he finally realizes, hey, bodies are going to keep hitting the floor. It's time to make a final stand.
Let's put on Metallica instead.
There you go. Yeah. Now, there's a rescore I would like to see. Get Megadeth or Metallica. Oh,
that reminds me when Heavy Metal 2000 came out and shit. I was like, man. Or I watched and I was like, why didn't they make a Heavy Metal 3000 with
new artists? They might as well, dude. They're out of ideas.
I mean, you guys love Death Robots, but I mean, that's good, but yeah, mm-hmm. Hit or miss now, man.
Oh, totally. And it would have been amusing seeing, with all the Iceland and Swedish bands that are Lord of the Rings inspired, like Blind Guardian.
Yeah.
Even parts of Dream Theater, you would think there'd be some other bands that would pay tribute to.
Yeah.
But yeah, altogether, I mean, I do have to applaud them because it's just so just epic just seeing, again, even just that first scene when they first walk up through the mountains,
yep.
The Misty Mountains, and you have that iconic theme and the scene that just made all the trailers at the time, you know, but
mm-hmm.
It's just because it is so well shot. All the actors are, you know, however it's framed, you believe that they're actually walking up a giant mountain. You're not thinking about, okay, that's a green screen or what have you. You're not sidetracked with, again, just about every other film at this time. People forget, you know, just people were getting sidetracked with how glamorous we can make it look and all that. Mm-hmm. And they had already gone through that barrier. Okay, go with some unknowns and, you know, film in New Zealand and has a fantasy appearance. And
yeah.
Jeff Murphy, who you might know from blockbusters like Utu and Young Guns 2, Under Siege 2, Fortress 2.
All so kinds many of twos.
B action sci-fi movies. Free Jack, there's a fun one. He did the second unit directing for a lot of this, and I got to applaud him and some of the other guys. As well as the guy who was the Swordmaster on this, as well as for Darth Vader in the Star Wars movies and the Highlander movies and show. But it's just same kind of deal. I mean, I know the Swordmaster also worked on Princess Bride, but same kind of scenario. It's just make sure everyone's walking like a so-called fancy knight while also making sure the acting and personification is there, in addition to getting a shot that's, you know,
cinematic.
Creating the world instead of just, you know, nowadays if someone did this, they would hire probably a music video director who's not keen on actually telling any kind of story, you know.
Yeah, I hate that.
Just that first scene where they're all together, like you buy it. It's like, okay, they're a collective now.
Mm-hmm.
Who's gonna split up this, you know? Doesn't
we're all together now, we're gonna break apart for two films. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. And we can't not mention the Balrog fight. Oh my god, I want there to be an anime sometime where all these white and brown wizards got to fight Balrogs during the first stage.
Dude.
And it could be Heavy Metal style, that'd be cool. It could be a Kira style, I'd watch it. Just that final battle, you love how he's able to just, again, kick the shit out of this giant beast at first, but then it ends up ultimately being too much, just like the cave troll. And it, without spoiling too much for a 20 plus year old movie, it's cool to just end this and just show, hey, inevitably, no one is safe. And it's annoying as a kid because, you know, when you're a kid, you don't want any. I was coming in at the right time when, as a teen, you're looking for just fascinating, morbid, and sometimes a captivating drama mixed in with supernatural adventure and all that. But it was just good to know. It was like, okay, there's no easy way out. You know, someone is going down for the count. And just again, yeah. And the Balrog fight was just perfect, because especially when they're turning off the lights and they're all surrounded by the goblins, and then that thing comes out, because it's in the same turf. And this is why I was so underwhelmed by the smog in the Hobbit movies, because it's just like, no, not at all.
Yeah, smog. But desolation is the worst, because it
was outdated a year after it came out. I saw it on HBO, and I'm like, that looks fake. I had thrown my 3D glasses off in the theater because I just didn't like the movie and how it was rendered. But like, on a digital screen, it looked like a 2001 level graphic. And it was just kind of how I was with like the newer Terminator sequels and Avengers movies. I'm like, why does this new stuff look so fake? And the stuff from years ago still looks great. You know, it's just,
it because back sense. Then they weren't trying. Like, you look at all the older CBMs that have come out, and none of them were trying. They just did. There was no effort. There was no competition. It was just like, hey, we're going to put out this sequel, that sequel, this installment, this person.
Yeah.
And they went with what worked. And nowadays it's like, now everything's splintered into apartheid. And now you have this verse, that verse, this universe. And it's like, oh my God, shut up. They're all connected. Quit trying to separate everything out. Oh. It's so disgusting, and it kills you half the time.
It really does.
Yeah, like, here's the perfect example. Everything Geek on Twitter did a question asking, you know, what's your favorite order of Robins from Batman? And most of them were choosing, they followed, everybody that answered followed the ones that are out. Dick, Tim, Jason, and Damian. And I'm like, yeah, like, because those are the ones everybody knows the best. And I'm like, what about Carrie, Drake Winston, Duke Thomas, and Flashpoint Robin? Because nobody ever mentioned them. I'm like, why the fuck are they only sticking to the main ones and not the other ones? Like, what the fuck? They're all connected. They're all the same Robin. They all don the motherfucking costume. They have different titles and shit, but it's like,
they why do that, as so well much... as some of this other stuff where you're just like, the character hasn't even come to life yet, you gotta chill.
I know, it's like, it shows who has read comics and who has seen the movies. That was the big thing. That's what really trips me out, is you have so many people who have not read a book and only seen a physical version. And that's what they go by. And there's such a disconnect with fans in that. Like, you bring up something like, oh, well, they need to cast somebody for this role then. Like, there's no need to cast shit. The motherfucker exists. Read about him. Well, I don't want to do that. That's too much work.
Every filmmaker should literally just raid their nephew or niece's, like, closet of comics and start studying with them. Hell, get them their first gig, make their parents happy as their PA, you know, personal assistant.
That's right.
Researcher, you know, even if they got to pay it out of their own pocket, do something instead of just be like, well, it wasn't what I wanted to make. Or do what they did with Andor, where Tony Gilroy, Enemy of the State and Born Identity fame, says, hey, I'm using a Star Wars template, but I'm doing my own political spy heist thriller. I'm like, okay, cool. So do your own thing. I mean, Nicholas Meyer, when he set out to do all the Star Trek movies, he wasn't even a Star Trek guy. He wanted to make an anti-Star Trek film, but it worked because he's already good at creating suspense and intrigue and all this other stuff, and it just worked for the franchise. People forget about that at the time, but when it was first announced, they were like, oh, you're going to kill a major character? That won't work. I'm like, well, it did.
And people are like, Star Wars and Star Trek aren't political. I'm like,
oh my God. There was no social commentary in Star Trek. Yes, there was.
There's plenty of it.
That's literally the point of every episode. Don't interfere with this or that. And you'll see some of those same pricks quote the Prime Directive without clearly knowing what the Prime Directive means. I'm like, so, you know, it goes both ways. Don't say you believe in it if you're not going to buy into it.
Oh, yep. I don't like this because it doesn't end with the captain, you know, fucking an alien babe.
It's not supposed to be all about the original.
It's like, not a guy's fantasy all the time, guys. Just saying.
I know. I got a whole damn versus thing on Trek and Wars, and it's like, I don't want to turn this whole video into Trek and Wars.
Oh, man. It's just, it's eye-opening as well as exhausting to where it's just like, guys, will you just stop?
I know. Anyway, best fights in life.
Oh, man.
Let's see. Well, we got to bring up fucking Vigo versus the helmet. Have to. That is the underrated dog in this shit.
The main Uruk-hai and avenging Boromir's death. And at first, you don't think he's going to survive. It's a perfect counter to the book, because the book, you know, I do have to applaud it when I think about it more in more hindsight, how that chapter was really good at illustrating altogether just the chaoticness of everyone being separated and what have you. And it was just so unreal how they were able to do that here while also just allowing, again, you know, it to connect, like, you know what's going on. Nowadays, this would probably be too much steady cam or tracking shots, or I don't know, just some other music video producer, you know, having inappropriate music play while there's a segment of montage of fights, you know, none of that.
A careless whisper comes on. What the fuck are you playing George Michael for? It's catchy, but it's the wrong music.
Play the wrong music. That's just not going to happen.
Wait, is that saxophone solo while somebody's clashing weapons? Okay, sell me more.
Sell me more. Altogether, I mean, it works much like the Indiana Jones movies, where it's just all the practical, just framing and.
It's the practicality, hands down. You can't.
It really is
that.
The practicality, and kudos to anybody who can do something like this on a digital scale. That's fine too, but this should totally be studied. Do not let anybody who's, you know, poo-pooing material like this nowadays, you know, just get on your wrong side, because it is important stuff to think about, because it really was next level. It still stands the test of time. I even see people who were never generally not into movies like this who are into it, because I think, again, everyone respected one another. If they didn't get along right away, they got along with each other by like day three, because they were in it to win it. And I see so many other productions like, you know, Gods of Egypt and what have you, where you just, I mean, there's even movies I'm surprised I even liked, like The Great Wall in Last Samurai.
Oh, that was good in D-Box. It has its issues, but it was a good movie.
And they rescued him enough by doing enough rewrites and what have you, because like there's so many others where you just feel like five different people have written it, credited or not, and followed by just confusion. And that's pretty much what every other blockbuster is just missing nowadays, is like they're so focused on getting that sequel, and it's the same issue every time, where it's like, come on. But I think it can change up a bit. I think there's surely some people who are studying it out there and realizing, hey, this is how we have to go about this. We can't just cheat everything with a red camera and what have you. Fix it in post. It does have to be organized. It does have to be safe. It does have to be just captivating. I think The Wheel of Time has been doing a good job of similar kind of format.
Yeah.
And same kind of deal. I saw people who were like, oh my God, you're making the women be strong. I'm like, why are we having this conversation?
I know, for real. Like, I even read a little bit up on the Wheel of Time. I never read the series. I remember seeing all the books at my library back in the day when they were on the for sale shelf. And I never thought anything of it. I liked the covers and shit, but I never read it. And then I did a little research on it when it debuted, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. I'm like, wow, it's actually a major article driven storyline. Like, that's bullshit. I like that. It's woke. I'm like, no, it's not.
Everybody loves using woke without even knowing what it means. And
I know, it's like, that started with the Black community. That was my community. And then people warped it into their own fucking thing. Like, that's not how this works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude, no.
It's like, can you stop? I think we should stop.
Like, you're not helping matters. You're making it worse. No, I'm not. Yes, you are.
Yeah, pretty exhausting. Hopefully everybody's just finally out of it, though. Like, they're just
doubtful.
Doubtful, but
I can't wait for the next fucking argument that comes out. It's so dumb. They're not dark enough. They're not cracked enough.
Right?
Yeah. The funniest thing? People gatekeeping casting roles. I love that shit. That cracks me up.
Yeah, they'll always do the classic spectacle of, oh, you know, I'm not gay. I always do that even as a disclaimer. I'm like, I do not like this. I do not care for this and that. Not gatekeeping. And I always love it. People will say, it's not what I said you were doing. I'm like, just doing a disclaimer.
Yep.
Last thing I'm going to do is be accused of doing something that everyone else is infamous for doing.
Mm-hmm. It's just funny. It's like you fan cast somebody and people get mad depending on who you pick.
Oh my God.
You know, like, I can't be this color. I'm like, why?
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 Hmm?
That's another good fight. Legolas versus Gimli throughout the damn film. Can't give her.
And that's one thing from the book. It's a very, very obvious one. Just like Merry and Pippin's camaraderie.
No.
They especially go to town with discussing Legolas and Gimli acting like it's, you know, it's a challenge trying to who will have a bigger body count. And it needed that, you know, because those are the light nature.
It's a buddy cop film, basically.
It really is. It's 48 yeah. hours. And
love that
C-3PO and R2-D2. Well, no, that's Merry and Pippin. My bad. But yeah, it's just so cool just seeing them again, you know.
It's the camaraderie of it.
Yeah, and I see other people who will bitch nowadays about just not caring for some of these actors and other things. You know, I have no issue with now, obviously, you know, Orlando Bloom's not for everybody, but he was the role. He was perfect for that. He appeals way more than, say, some of these other guys who just anytime you see them, like, I'll take them over, say, the Anakin Skywalkers of the world, where it's like, yes, it's in character with, you know, like father, like son. That's all Luke does first episode, you know, for the first 20 minutes. But after a while, something does have to change. You know, like, can't do just, hey, you know.
You can't just focus on one character. You have a 9 character story, and it's like, dude, you got 9 arcs to fuck with. You have to make everybody evolve. You can't just have it focus on 2 people.
There's that, and make use of your time, you know.
Yeah.
So many love to just complain about all kinds of things instead of what they could do better, and that's why I'm not a fan of all these red letter media type stuff where people are just shit talking for the sake of it. Like, if people are going to shit talk, make it be funny.
I know, for real.
It used to be, hey, well, not saying I can do a better job, but fuck this movie. I'm like, okay, you have my respect, because now you're just at least confessing, hey, I can't do a better job. This sucks.
Yeah. Like, when I was rewriting my fanfic and shit, and I got 20 plus characters in my fanfic. Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Nightmare.
Yeah. So I'm working 20 different mindsets, 20 different arcs, 20 different attitudes.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
And pacing that was so draining at the whole time I worked on it. It was so draining, but it was a lot of fun because I had to involve everybody. But
painting
you also
especially
have to,
will be that way.
Oh, God, painting. What a mess.
It's not for everyone, but I'm just saying it's interesting in how wide you can go into.
Yeah, that's true.
What keeps it afloat, but it is interesting too in how sometimes it just brings out the worst in us. Altogether, it's also interesting how we got all these standards, we got all these what we love, and not enough people want to talk about why certain things work and why other things don't. It's like the constructiveness of any kind of narrative seems to be just falling
apart. Is it male driven? Is it right?
Yeah, it's there was even a person I did a fun chat with, and then near the end they just revealed how toxic they were. I don't believe in toxic masculinity. I'm like, it's a thing.
Oh,
why do you think there's misogyny?
I know, right? Like, you can't have one without the other.
I don't want to be reminded of what pieces of shit men are. Well, then you won't learn.
I know. Like, I look back on the shit I used to say and do. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. I was a dick. I was an unintentional dick, too. I was quiet enough, but there's other times where I'm like, man, I came this close to opening my goddamn mouth and people would forever had remembered me in the worst possible way. Thank God, you know.
Yeah.
My parents taught me enough discretion. Never, no pressure, no making people fear for themselves, but always just reminding, hey, do the right thing. And to be remembered for it. And I think many just, they don't want to
admit think about their what's faults. Better.
They want to excuse the fact that they're a selfish douche. And it's like, no, then don't do that.
True.
Yeah.
And then you see these characters and you want to, what's the word? You want to exude them so well, but at the same time, you know, you got to be able to separate fiction from reality.
Yeah, a lot of people just can't, unfortunately, and it's just pathetic, really, because you're just like, seriously? There's nothing to it.
I don't know.
At all.
And it was like, oh, I'm doing a good thing that King Aragorn would have done. Like,
would he have really said that, though? Like, would he have really acted like that?
Would anyone want that, really? Would anyone want to follow a selfish douche around? Oh, no, make it like the book. Let's not make it like the book. There's a reason certain stuff is not followed.
No, like, you know Sam Liu?
L.I.U.
He did a lot of DC films, animated ones. Good. I like him. He is one of my favorite directors. I talked to him about Planet Hulk because he worked on that. And I hate that fucking movie. Oh, God. You want to see a film that guts the fucking story? Go watch that shit.
Oh, boy.
If we do a Marvel thing again, I will explain the whole deal. But I talked to him about it, and I was like, you know, what happened to the story? And he's like, well, one, it's a short film, and it's only 70 or 80 minutes long. And he's like, would you really want to see all that complexity crammed into
it? Not at all. There's been some great... There's this one that had like Ron Perlman in it that got some acclaim. It was a great short film, and then they tried to expand it, and it wasn't the same. They're like, see, this is why it's a short film. Same thing with Kung Fury, that they're having Schwarzenegger in this extended parody, but it was a perfect montage of making fun of 80s cop movies and cops and robbers, and people were like, I want more. I'm like, there's a reason it's a short. If they do, you know, 20 more minutes, that'll be too much.
Yeah, that's like when I watched the Batman of Shanghai again. I was like, oh, this should be a fucking miniseries, but it's only a four. It's like,
oh, hell, take all of season three or four of Gotham. That would be a great miniseries, way better than The Dark Knight Rises of showing Gotham take over. And if anything, people who don't like Lord of the Rings should still study it. Why does it work for most people? Because I see so many people like, there's many blockbusters I do not care for, but I'm going to be just straight up. I'll be like, hey, you know, it just doesn't do anything for me. Here's why.
Top three. Yeah, I'm curious.
Because so many people will just refuse to study stuff that they don't like. I can tell you why so many other blockbusters, and too many to go into, just that are big and loud. And, you know, I'm not a Mad Max or Fast and Furious guy.
Oh my God, you don't like cars? What you the bastard, fuck?
You killed us all. And it's just like, no, it does not do anything for me. But
yeah, Fast and Furious, I can totally understand. That blew out of fucking proportion. The first one, iconic as hell. Definitely a staple for 2000s. The other ones, oh man.
Just confused in tone. And it'll change within minutes to where I'm like, okay, I value my time. And you wasted it by not focusing on any kind of story.
Oh, no, it's funny. Mad Max, that's interesting. Considering how iconic that is and shit.
It is iconic. I'm just, again, I'm more of an Indiana Jones guy. I do not.
Gibson that you don't like? Or
no,
is it just
no,
the whole
see,
layout for it?
And we're going to be doing actually a special lot. We've been doing movies which were like limited releases and video on demand, like eras of people's careers. So we're going to be doing, you know, Bruce Willis and Mel Gibson and all those other troubled guys. But
Troubled. What trouble?
this was years before I knew about his problems. It was more of a matter of just like, I can watch the first three, but by the time the new one came out, I was just like, nope, it doesn't.
Oh, you didn't like Fury Road.
Oh, God.
Oh, dude, I watched it twice, and I could not get my head to give it a proper review. Like, it's, I don't know what the hell it is. It's not Tom. It's not the director. It's not the cast. I don't know.
It's just very confusing. Is it supposed to be a reboot, or is it supposed to be a
follow-up?
Yeah, and they can't even answer that. And I'm like, see, if this was anything else, you guys would be all over this. You'd be like,
true.
And I'm just like, okay, no exception. Why does this get treatment and Fast and Furious gets left off of stage? Why do the Expendables, which are trying to do homages to earlier works, often get mocked?
Yeah, for real. It's like with Indiana Jones coming out. Like, I talked to my one friend about that in his group, and people are like, they're going to be expecting, you know, Harrison to do all these cool stunts. And I'm like, that motherfucker is 80 years old. He might look like he's in good shape, but them bones ain't the same fucking age.
He looked good on this recent Yellowstone prequel spinoff, 1923, but...
But that's like a low... That's low maintenance, though. You're talking like
big
low
maintenance, dude. There's plenty of gunfighting.
Well, that's gunfighting, but like physical. That's low physical
too. He's doing horse riding, so... Now, don't get me wrong. It took way longer, and so I'll call them on their bluff. If it comes out and they got a generic plot line, I'm going to say, you know, you were too focused on the production and not enough on the scenario. But
well, I mean, it's basic as hell. It's him fighting Nazis again.
Hopefully they go somewhere else with this. I think it's going to be like just third party adventurers at this point.
So good.
I hope they stick with that. The James Mangold connection makes sense because he worked on Call of the Wild with him, which is a total dad movie.
Oh, no, that movie sucks ass.
Oh, damn.
I was like, really? Like, you got a CGI dog? Really? Yeah.
Well, and I think this is a good contrast. This is what I love about Weta, what they did on the new Planet of the Apes films and iRobot. And so when I saw Industrial Light and Magic getting a big giant head when that shitty World of Warcraft movie came out, they're like, see, we're doing something that's never been done. I'm glad it entertained. I could not do it. But it was just like, guys, you're doing exactly what they already achieved with Lord of the Rings. So what are you happy about?
Well, no, like I watched it the first time. I was like, oh, this is fucking amazing. And then time went by and I'd forgotten about it. And then I got into Warcraft and shit because I've been reading the books and covering the art books on my channel and shit.
Are they like the Halo or Splinter Cell books where they vary?
I never read those. Oh. But nah, the art books for Warcraft are amazing. And you got the Chronicles and there's so much tie-in material. And I'm so amazed by this universe. And then I rewatched the movie and I was like, oh, I know when this picks up from and where it starts. And now I understand more. And I was like, this is really good shit.
That's good. All together, I mean, when we did this chat, we knew this was going to be hard to pin down because there's just so much.
And everything ties into Lotter, which makes it so much fun.
You feel every punch. You feel every gut punch emotionally. Mm-hmm. You feel every just foreshadow. Like, and I love how half the time they're just looking out into the openness, but unlike just, you know, any other blockbuster, which is doing that just to have some kind of downtime, you are following it because you know that they're trying to give a realistic kind of medieval war feeling.
Yeah.
And I think so many movies miss out on that. Like, they do not do their homework on, hey, this would actually be fascinating if we shot it this way.
Like Dungeons and Dragons in 2000. Dated as that is, shit is accurate to D&D. And I was surprised. I was very surprised at that, because when I watched it back then, I was like, oh, this is too cool. I love it. It's awesome. And then I rewatched it decades later, and it's like, yeah, there's some dated shit, but they got the attire accurate. They got the layout accurate. And I was impressed. I was really impressed. It's still good. It's just, it's really dated.
And, you know, I was hit and miss on that. I preferred the sequel they did where they brought back evil Bruce Payne. I'm actually excited for this upcoming movie. Haven't seen the trailers.
Me too.
I'm just like,
oh, you haven't seen the trailers yet? Oh, shit.
I never watch trailers because it always disappoints me. There's always shit that's not in the final cut. You know, obviously, I'm not gonna be disappointed by something like Deadpool, where the whole point is to make something only in the trailer. But then there are other moments where it's like, you bastard, we talked about this, and you just cut that scene.
Like, it was, but I like the thing I like about trailers is they're all misleading, every single one of them, or they hide the intentional spoiler in the damn trailer. That's funny as hell. I love that shit. I'm like, ah, that's what happened. Okay, you clever motherfucker.
I just don't like all the shitty rap music or half-assed attempt at a Don LaFontaine, you know. They pretty much, as close as they get is that Ashton Smith guy who does promos for like CNN and Lionsgate Home Entertainment. And he's like, that's as close as you get to the, they are the most unstoppable merch. And it's like, see, that's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear all this, everyone market, like, Mission Impossible is kind of doing that too, where they're trying to look like the Expendables or Fast and Furious, and everyone's doing that. Like, that's just, unfortunately, it's kind of like the CSI Law and Order effect, where people have to look like the other just so they can get more viewers. And it's like, no, be you. Don't cater.
Don't. Yeah, for real.
You know, James Bond's been doing this for a while. It's like they were trying to look like Bourne. Moonraker was a Star Wars knockoff. And it's like, fuck this. Guys, be you. Stop trying to be like Taken or Equalizer. Be you. Stop trying to outdo each other. I don't have to. Daniel Craig and Tom Cruise being punched more does not make any real difference in terms of the quality.
Fuck no.
Yeah, fuck Tom Cruise, by the way. But in fact, it would have been amazing seeing him get decapitated here with a lightsaber or a sword. But
oh god!
And it's just so amazing how it's the rare use of, hey, we're gonna watch this movie because we want to see, again, you know, action. We don't care about the main actor per se. And kudos to this new Jack Reacher show. They made something that was finally like the books. And its own cool spy show. And altogether, I mean, we've kind of gone on a tangent, but it's interesting too how Lord of the Rings just kind of reminds people, like, Whose Line Is It Anyway had some hysterical skits where Colin Mockery had to reenact it. Love Whose Line. And Colin Mockery, on a more recent episode, I want to say 3 years ago, did a funny skit where he was like, people fighting, people fighting, people fighting, ching, ching, ching. I'm like, that's awesome. That is Lord of the Rings. That is all you need to know, even if you haven't seen it. It is funny, though, too, how they would, on occasion, find people who is like, these are the exact same places as Xena or Hercules.
Yeah.
I buy it.
Yeah.
I can buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. Funny thing about Hercules and Xena, my girlfriend actually met Kevin Smith back then, and he actually cooked her and her friend dinner one time.
That's fucking awesome.
I know, and even better.
He should have done a cameo in these along with Stephen Colbert.
Oh, I miss Kevin Smith so much. Fuck.
I forgive you, Tusk.
Oh, you don't know which Kevin Smith I'm talking about. Oh, I love you. There's two Kevin Smiths. There's Kevin Smith of Jay and Silent Bob, and there's Kevin Smith Aries. I'm talking about Aries. Oh, man. Yeah. she went to school with most of them that were in New Zealand, too.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm like, damn.
It all came together.
Uh-huh. And some of her friends were actually extras in Hercules and Xena. I'm like, damn. I'm like, I lucked out with the best girl on the planet. I'm so happy.
You did, man. Hey, yeah. It's good. It's good.
Man, I wish Kevin Smith was around, though. It's a shame he died so young. Fuck. He would have been the perfect Kraven.
So hunter. Which Kevin Smith are we talking about?
Ares.
Ares from Xena. Okay.
Yeah, him.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. He
died at a fall in a film studio in China.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He was young.
Okay, sorry. Okay. Sorry. You did say that. I just...
That's all right. Not everybody knows who I'm talking about. Even on Twitter when I mention, I'm like, I really miss Kevin Smith. Like, he's still alive. I'm like, you don't know which one I'm talking about. Or I brought up the role for Kraven and like, Kevin's too fat for that. I'm like,
fuck you.
You don't know which one say I'm that talking shit to anybody. I'm like, no, Kevin Smith with Jay and Silent Bob lost a lot of weight. The Kevin Smith I'm talking about has been dead for over 21 years. No, I miss him. Oh, man.
Happens.
Yeah.
Happens.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised he wasn't cast Gary's Kevin Smith for Lauder, because he would have fit the role good for something.
Might as well have.
Boromir. He would have been good at Boromir.
Something, man. Something.
Yeah, because he had that intensity. And I loved his... You need to rewatch that shit with Hercules and Xena. You'll see. Like, he had that, like, funniness, but also the seriousness. Trust me, of that.
It used to be on Heroes and Icons channel about 2 years ago, and it was interesting seeing how as big a shit head as Kevin Sorbo is, I actually can still watch a Hercules episode just because it has that sense of innocent fun. It doesn't do it for me like, say, Highlander or some of these other fantasy shows, or even The Sentinel, if you want to go into UPN type campus.
Oh my god, wow. You
brought USA Network UPN type Jesus fun Christ shows. But,
I forgot about The Sentinel.
But I'm not going to lie, Lucy Lawless is a good actress, and I like how she's been showing a comedic side in all these other roles and other serious moments, like in X-Files or Battlestar, but it's, you know, some of that does get a little too silly for my own taste, but it's good for what it is, and I gotta applaud. Wow.
I got goosebumps thinking about UPN. Fuck. Damn.
Altogether, it's interesting seeing how, again, just those had some serious production values. They were just, was back when they would throw money at shit back in the day.
Yeah, and the stuff was so cheap. Like, so fuck, cheap. You look at how much it costs. And it's
Sam
like,
Raimi's production company, and then they'd bring in all these other guys who had directed CBS or NBC type programs. One of them was like a director on Law and Order who was like, no one wants to work with because they found some kiddie porn on his computer. Don't worry, he didn't direct SVU. That would have been ironic. Because then he could have done the whole, I'm doing research. He's like, fuck you, dude. Research my ass.
Oh, God, that's funny.
It is hysterical, though, how some of those guys who do some of those crime shows are like, I must be on an FBI watch list.
Oh, that's funnier.
Yeah. Hey, it's been great having you on here, dude. Any other battles?
Oh, we're ending already? No. We didn't even talk shit about the battles.
I can't think of any battles I would talk shit about. Like, every other movie or show, there's a scene where I'm like, that could have been shot better, or that, you know, I just was not shot well at all. But I don't have an issue. I have glasses. I can actually see every fight.
Yeah, me too. Identity.
I don't like any of the action in Skyfall and parts of Spectre, but that's just me. But some of those
James I never Bond watched movies. The other Bond installments. Casino Royale did it for me. That was a good one. That really surprised me.
Yeah, that is good. Dynamite, and I hope they bring Martin Campbell back, because he's the only one who seems to understand how to do equal parts acting, dramatic, you know, and dry comedy, and then mix in practical stunts. Like, all the other ones seem to be too robotic or argue or let Daniel Craig do whatever he wants, and it's just not wrong sauce. And I just can't think of a single fight in these Tolkien movies. I mean, even
that was bad. You really can't.
As much as I do not care for the Hobbit trilogy, I'm not gonna lie, there are some good Gandalf fights in parts 1 and 2 and 3, but my issue is just with them trying to make it too much of an oversaturated cash grab and too much dead space in between all the intrigue that the book had, and then doing all these Easter eggs that you don't understand unless you read the book. It's just like, come on, that was sloppy. But the actual movies and the Rings of Power show, and even the Ralph Bakshi theatrical movie, I can say they all got some epic moments, and everyone should seek them out.
But yeah, I actually watched Fellowship. I watched the original animated version of that.
Yeah,
a few years back. That was really fun.
And just the rotoscoping is just so eye catching.
Yes.
Kudos to them even releasing an epic DVD Blu-ray trailer recently.
Oh god.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.